Good afternoon, Packers fans. Aaron Nagler here with your Packers Daily Chat, coming to you live on the Cheesehead TV social channels. It is Thursday. Hope you're having a great week. We inch closer to the start of OTAs. Next Tuesday, the guys will be in the classroom on the football fields, and we will finally get some availability. The media will be given access one day a week during OTAs starting next week. So we'll hear from Matt LaFleur, hear from the guys in the locker room, and get a little bit of some tantalizing updates in the offseason from practice. We're very close, people. We're very close. So OTAs around the corner. Very exciting. Obviously, this is after Memorial Day weekend. Hope you're all getting away and doing something fun. I know I will be watching Chelsea Sunday morning, trying to find their way into a spot in the Champions League next year. But whatever you're doing, hope you're set to have a great holiday weekend and a safe one as well. Obviously, I missed you guys yesterday. Packers Daily was not on yesterday afternoon. I had family stuff to deal with, but I am back here today to talk to all you fine folks about the proceedings at the league meetings that we didn't get to talk about yesterday. Of course, the headline being the Packers' proposal for banning the tush push being felled by two votes. That's right. The Packers' proposal coming up two votes short of passing 22. They needed 24. They did not get that. So, of course, Eagles fans and the team itself took to social media and really took a victory lap about it. And I'm all for it. I think it's a lot of fun. I think it breeds a bit more into a rivalry with the Eagles and the Packers. And I absolutely love that. It's going to make this game this year all hell of a lot more fun. And I'm, you know, not going to lie, I'm very happy that it's happening at Lambeau Field. And I do love that it's in prime time. Monday Night Football contest at Lambeau is always a good time. And yeah, a little spice to this rivalry here. I think most learned, kind of informed fans understand, even not just talking Packers fans, but NFL fans understand what transpired here. The Packers were utilized by the league office. And I know Mike Florio has reported as much at this point to kind of be the, I'm not going to say guinea pig, but the bearer of the standard bearer for this thing, because they don't have a traditional owner and their president and CEO is retiring in a couple months. And they did just, you know, get to host a draft that nobody thought they would ever get a chance to do. So I do understand that the Packers were somewhat used by the league to put this thing in front of ownership and to try to get a play banned that apparently some other owners and people within the league office aren't big fans of. And as I said, when I went on my little mini tirade about Mark Murphy, when he has wrote about it on Packers.com a number of times, at least twice, right? He has publicly come out against this play and wanting it banned. Man, just figure out how to stop it, which the Packers have better than anybody else in the league almost. I mean, just on pure numbers and success rate, when the Eagles run it against the Packers, it has been, you know, their least successful, you know, in relation to any other team. And the Packers also utilize a version of the play with Tucker Kraft to some pretty decent success. And then I get they're going to try and like probably bring this back up next year. And I, you know, do think it's only a matter of time. You know, Roger Goodell and company want it gone. It's probably going to be gone. And they got close to succeeding with that this time. But I just want most kind of NFL fans to understand that I think most Packers fans are with you in the sense that, man, I got no problem with the play. I think you want to stop it, figure out how to stop it. You know, you don't want to see it utilized anymore. Make it a lot more difficult to run. Now, I already hear the, you know, responses either in the chat or the comment sections or what have you. Well, you know, the biggest component here, the biggest issue that I think most, again, informed fans have with this play is the lack of adjudication when it comes to the Eagles lining up their offensive line in the neutral zone. Not every time, but quite often, and it never gets called. And it's wild to me that this is so obvious and everyone sees it, but yet, for whatever reason, it rarely gets kind of talked about on the broadcast or indeed flagged by the officials. Yet, John Runyon Jr. got flagged for it twice in one game a couple years ago in Lambeau Field, like so randomly. Remember that season where they were going to crack down on the neutral zone? well, maybe start cracking down on the neutral zone when it's third or fourth and short and the Eagles have the football. I think that, to me, is probably the biggest component here that most fans would like to see when it comes to, all right, fine, league office, you don't like this play. Reiterate with your officials, tell the competition committee, you always, every summer, come up with a point of emphasis, right? That we then hear about at, like, basically through the start of training camp, through the first month or so of the season, until you get down like halfway through the year, and then it's kind of almost forgotten about usually. Hey, guess for once, utilize this idea of a rules emphasis and emphasize the neutral zone and how teams line up. That's, I think, would go a long way to quelling a lot of the complaining about the play. I really do. So we'll see how it transpires. All of that said, the funny part to me is the Eagles are way better and more important and, like, don't even really need the tush push. I think they're a excellent football team. They certainly were last year. Their lines are excellent and own the line of scrimmage. That is why they win football games. It ain't because of this play. And I get it. Sirianni and company, they've talked about how, yeah, that means we've got four downs to play with rather than three. And it's fourth and, or it's first and nine every time they get the football. I get all that. I understand that component of it. But they're an excellent football team, and they are way, way better than just this one play that everyone, at least the media, has driven this narrative of, oh, like, not only do they own it, but they're defined by it. And of course, they absolutely aren't. They are such a bigger and better football team than that one play. So all that to say, can't wait for them to come to Lambeau Field. I can already tell just from my mentions that Eagles fans are going to be in rare form, not just all season, but certainly leading up to that game in Lambeau. It's going to be a good time. Hello to everybody in the comments section. So good to see you all. Soder's here, everybody. Get your hat on. Good to see you all. Want to give a shout out to our good friends over at Ticket King before we get going to your comments and questions. Ticket King is based in Wisconsin since 1992, located across the street from Lambeau Field on Oneida. They're happy to help you find just the right tickets for Packers games, from larger groups to single tickets, both home and away. They partner with local Green Bay businesses for tailgating and bus transportation to the games, so you don't have to worry about driving or parking. They're even open on game day for last-minute tickets or possible upgrades. They even have a drive-through window. And if you're not in Green Bay, no problem. Just use the Ticket King link on the Cheesehead TV homepage in the description of this video, or indeed on our app on the schedule. Each and every game has its own individualized link for tickets to that game. Don't use Ticketmaster, StubHub, SeatGeek, none of these national companies. Use a company based in Wisconsin since the early 90s. Ticket King, for all your Packers ticket needs. Do it, folks. You know you want to. What's going on, folks? So good to see everybody. What we got going on here? We got folks with Super Chats. We got Jesse. What's going on, man? It seems inconsistent that a ball carrier can't be pushed back by the defense for progress, but can be pushed forward by the offense. Beat the birds. Yeah, there's a lot that's inconsistent with the rule as written, and the way they probably should have attacked it from the beginning was, you know, the revised version that they kind of put forth this week in Minneapolis probably should have been the version they utilized right from the get-go in March. And I think maybe they would have gotten closer and or succeeded in arriving at those 24 votes they needed. But yeah, the way that this whole thing has transpired since, you know, the rule was changed in 2005 has been a lot of unintended consequences. And now I think, you know, they're dealing with having let that genie out of the lamp. And I am more than happy if the league goes back to the days of, I mean, think about the Ice Bowl and the iconic picture of the arms in the air, not because he wants to signal touchdown, because he wants the officials to know that he's not helping, you know, Bart Starr into the end zone. It was real simple for me, and why they changed it, I mean, I know they had their reasons, but I don't think it was very well thought out in any sense. Soder, thanks for being a Care of the G Club member, man. Billionaires are cowards. Why the hell would the three teams that go against Josh Allen twice a year all vote no? You know, I do think there is some kind of horse trading going on behind the scenes, no doubt about it. And I'm sure there's some arm twisting by the league. And then you've got teams that have relationships, coaching staff, general managers, what have you, personnel people with each other, where I'm sure there's a lot of talk going on with, hey, I need you on this and you stick with us and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it is kind of funny to watch, you know, teams that aren't very successful at this play line up to keep it, or teams that aren't successful at stopping it, lining up to keep it. The Packers spearheading the charge, at least, you know, ceremoniously, are pretty good at stopping it and run a very successful version of their own. I mean, adapt or die is what I think. Ryan, thanks for the super chat, man. What are your thoughts on Wisconsin playing Notre Dame the Sunday before the regular season next year? Is it going to be the Sunday? Do we know for sure? I mean, maybe that just means the Packers have an away game that year, that week. But I did see that Wisconsin's going to play Notre Dame in Lambeau Field, which is crazy to me. I know everyone who attended the LSU game a couple years ago at Lambeau, the Wisconsin LSU game, said it was amazing. The vibe was incredible. Even Corey Behnke, who cares not a whit about college football, said it was incredible. I'm excited by it. I do think you might be right, Ryan, that they start, maybe they start the league year, the regular season 1 week later, right? And that puts them, if they kind of draw it all out the way they have been, that puts them into President's Day week for the Super Bowl, which has been their goal for a long time. So I'm for it. I think it'll be a lot of fun. I like I said, I'm sure the vibes will be excellent. And hell, you know, Notre Dame has a connection to the Packers, if for no other reason, and that's, you know, a large part of the inspiration from Curly Lambeau to create the team was, you know, his time and his kind of connections to Notre Dame. So I'm down with it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Chad Simitovich, what's up, man? Enjoy the last year of the Tush Push. Two teams away. I do think there is a very decent chance that we're back here next year in the offseason talking about it again. And yeah, I do think there's a very decent chance that next year they're successful in banning it. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's a lot of wasted talk. But you know, if Roger and the league, they want this, they're probably going to get it eventually. Dustin, now we're talking. Is it just me, or is this the Wicks breakout year? It is not just you, Dustin. At least, see, I like a little positivity in the chat. There we go. There we go. Yes. Mark it down right here. 5:16 Eastern on May 22nd here on the Cheesehead TV social channels. Aaron Nagler decrees 2025 is going to be Dontavian Wicks breakout year. And you've spent all this offseason, not you, Dustin, fans, media have spent this entire offseason talking about, oh, they drafted these guys and Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson. Who knows what's going to happen with them? And they're going to have to get golden on the field right away. And Savion Williams, he's going to be a trick player. And what are they going to do? And then the dude no one really talked about, other than that one emoji he put out there after Josh Jacobs went to the Super Bowl and said they needed a number one wide receiver, Dontavian Wicks comes out and has a year. I'm thinking, yes, one big, happy, incredible, productive year where, no, I don't think he's going to, like, you know, lead the league in receiving and have 20 touchdowns or anything like that. So take it easy, fantasy players. But I do think he's going to be an integral part of the offense. I think he's going to be their main guy on the perimeter. And I think he is going to, if not completely solve the drops thing, I think he's going to be very much improved in that regard, a lot more dependable. And look, they need him. They need him in a big way. And we've talked about it here quite a bit as far as what the trajectory for a lot of receivers in the NFL used to be. That third season was when they started to ascend. Now, that has changed, certainly, in the modern game. There are a lot of guys coming out of college who are able to contribute and be productive right away in the league in a way that really hadn't happened in the past. But, you know, I think there's a lot of kind of variables there probably contributing to why Wick struggled last year, but I have all the faith in the world, and I do think he has all the ability, everything you need. The one, you know, knock, obviously, other than the drops, is he's not a burner. He's not a guy who's going to take the top off of defense, but he can be a technician, and we saw glimpses of it last summer. It never really translated to the regular season, but I know we can do it, and I think he does do it in 2025. Mark it zero. Portmaster, come on now. Good squad. Good squad. I'm thinking Super Bowl. Look at this. All this positivity today. I mean, I know it's May, so we can be positive because they haven't, you know, lost a yard or given up a point. So, yeah, good squad. I'm thinking Super Bowl. For anyone who doesn't know what that reference is, there is a great NFL Films audio clip of Aaron Rodgers and Charles Woodson on the sideline of a preseason game. And I believe Al Harris is with them, and the three of them are talking. And Aaron Rodgers says, I think we got a pretty good squad this year. What do you think, Wood? And Wood's good squad. I'm thinking Super Bowl. Come on now. Come on. That got me pumped up, Parkmaster. Klaus, how are you? Thanks for the super chat. As a Dane, I look forward to seeing the Packers playing the Cardinals this year since their C is Height Fordholt, another Dane. Go Pack, go. Klaus with a deep cut there. And I always appreciate you being here with us, Klaus, because I know you are across the pond in a big way and probably up very late wherever you are. So appreciate you, man. And hey, I'm looking forward to the Packers playing the Cardinals, if for no other reason than we can go back to the scene of I was told the game was over and the big breakout moment from Rasul Douglas. Let's get that vibe going again. Randy, how are you? Thanks for the super chat. Packers held Hurts, the Eagles offense, to 131 yards last January. Eagles can be beat with some good long point scoring drives, maybe a shot or two. That is, you know, obviously, I think something that you heard Josh Jacobs reference in his Bussin' with the Boys appearance, where he talked about we played them tougher probably than anybody else in the playoffs. I do think, yes, the Packers put a really good foot forward and the defense played very well. And the offense certainly was hampered by the injuries up front and then the injuries to all the wide receivers. So not to make excuses, but I also think there's a flip to that where if you talk to Eagles fans, they, you know, remember that Jalen Hurts had been on the sideline for a while heading into that game. And there were, you know, some tracking of how he was doing, kind of like we were with Jordan Love. But he was, I think fair to say a bit rusty coming into that game. And it's not to take away what the Packers did, but I would have been very curious to see how they fared against Hurts and the Eagles offense, say a couple weeks later in the NFC Championship game, instead of in the wild card round where they were just kind of getting Hurts back into the mix. Now that is not to, like I said, take anything away from the work they did, because they did, they were excellent on that afternoon by and large, right? I do love the idea of another season in Halfley's system under their belts collectively. Hopefully they're able to figure out a way to maybe crack the code when it comes to the Eagles offensive line and pressuring the quarterback, because that is something that remained a problem even in that game, you know. And I understand that they are excellent up front, no doubt about it, but they've got to be able to do a better job of getting, or at least harassing, Hurts. I think they did an excellent job for the balance of that playoff game, kind of taking away his initial reads and causing a little bit of doubt and confusion when it came to what he was looking at. And that was more often than not what either got him off the spot or the Packers were able to apply pressure because of that. But on the flip side, you don't have to look much further than that first touchdown where he's got literally 7 seconds in the pocket. I mean, that's embarrassing. That's just embarrassing. And the Packers cannot allow that to happen again. No doubt about it. Rick Harris, thanks for the super chat, man. Bounce back year for Musgrave. You know, it's hard for me to call it a bounce back year only because he hasn't been available, right? Like, yes, certainly at the beginning of last year, prior to the injury, it's not like he was lighting the world on fire, right? But at the same time, who knows what would have happened if he had been able to play week in and week out throughout the entirety of the season. Maybe, you know, he kind of eases into the year and becomes a pretty potent threat down the stretch. And that's just one possibility, right? I do think there's a player there. I think he's got tons of upside and talent, but he has got to be available. And we talked about this 2 days ago here on Daily. You know, they haven't really gotten a chance to scratch the surface of the possibilities with their two tight ends and the two tight end sets because Musgrave has spent so much time on the sideline with injuries. Can this be? Yes, 1,000,000,000%. He's got to improve in a number of areas, most notably just pretty much every physical aspect of the game, like especially in line, any kind of improvement in the blocking arena, so to speak, will be a welcome development. He can clearly be everything they wanted him to be when they drafted him, as far as being a vertical threat, a speed merchant, would match up on linebackers and run away from linebackers and safeties. He can do all that. Of that, there's no doubt. But he's got to become a more complete player to be able to utilize him, you know, as much as they want to, as far as the two tight end stuff, because you can't put a guy out there when it's a tell. You know, oh, Musgrave's out there. We know they're going to send him. We know what routes they're going to utilize or what kind of play structure they're going to use because he's out there. They would never trust him to block in line. They would never trust him to do these things that we know he's weak at. You know, he's got to become a more complete player so they can keep defenses guessing. And yes, he's absolutely capable of doing that. No doubt about it. Joe, thanks for the super chat, man. Packers could be a smaller at wide receiver this year with Golden and Hardman being added. Does that change anything in the running game? It shouldn't, as far as those guys won't be on the field unless they're blocking, right? And certainly won't be on the two wide receiver sets unless they're able to block. Especially with all the check with me stuff that they do at the line, the quarterback being able to get into run plays if he sees a certain look, you got to be able to do it. And that doesn't mean that they will be on the sideline all the time. Of course not. But more often than not, that is going to be, especially for those guys, their road to the field. You know, their ability to get on the field and be utilized and get playing time and get snaps is because they've shown they can be counted on when it comes to the run game, counted on to seal that edge, get that, root that cornerback out of there, or dig that safety out and provide space for Josh Jacobs to operate on the perimeter. Like, I don't think it's, you know, unfair what you're pointing out, because yeah, they're not the bigger, stronger types that the Packers have traditionally liked at the position. I think a guy like Savion Williams absolutely is. But those two in particular, yeah, they've got to show that they can do it. And look, that's kind of the path for Malik Heath to stick around, right? We've seen he is a goon, an absolute goon in the run game, and he can do everything they want him to do on the perimeter as a wide receiver. I still think he's probably on the outside looking in, but probably retained on the practice squad. But I tell you what, if there's an upset to be had, that's where it's at. Is showing not only your ability on special teams, which we all know is your pathway to the roster, but yeah, a physicality and a consistency when it comes to run blocking. Because we've seen it a million times under Matt. Like, if you can't do that, or you won't do that, or you're not good at it, or you're not consistent at it, it's going to be hard to get you on the field with any regularity. No doubt. Dustin, what's up, man? Remember the name Evan Williams? He has arrived. Man, I don't know if you were able to chat with Evan at the Cheesehead TV meetup in Green Bay, but dude, I love this kid. I'm so happy he's a Packer, and I'm with you, man. I think, you know, I talked a lot last summer about how much I liked him, his play on the field. He really stood out at Ray Nitschke Field in the summer, and I think you saw him just scratching the surface of his potential in his rookie season. And now, of course, he had a stretch there where he was sidelined with injury, but man, I'm very, very excited to see him as Xavier McKinney's running mate for the foreseeable future, because I do think, yes, he can be a very, very good player in the league. No doubt. John Simatovich, what's up, man? Thoughts on Ursay's legacy, RIP, also go Pacers. Okay, we're going to ignore that last part. But Ursay, I mean, legendary owner. I know there's a lot to talk about when it comes to some of the off-field stuff, some of the you know, problems that he had, which are well documented. But I also know most of the guys, maybe not to a man, but most of the players who, you know, worked for the man, played for the Colts, absolutely loved him. And there's something to be said for that, right? That connection that he had with his players is kind of a throwback. And I love that. I'm a sucker for that. So I also did really like how eccentric he was and his collectibles and things like that. But I don't want to pretend like he didn't have his issues. I think, like I said, those are pretty well documented. But to me, the greatest measure as an NFL owner is how much the men who played for him absolutely loved him. And that, I think, tells you a lot. Jacob, how are you? Thanks for the super chat. Man, it would be so nice to stop the tush push by defensive effort, preferably with a cold, creamy beer in hand. Go Pack, go. Could you imagine if they could like have a beer on the field? Like, there's Kenny Clark after, you know, stopping the tush push. He gets up and cracks open a carry the G. Let's go. That'd be dope. Ryan, thanks again. The NFL schedules will have egg on their face if Rodgers retires. I wanted to see the Packers in Dublin or Berlin. I really want to see them in Berlin. But yes, I would have loved to see them in Dublin. I was very excited by that idea. I will say, yeah, I still think Rodgers probably ends up with the Steelers probably starting next week or the week after. You know, I do agree with you, though, that if he retires, it's going to be rough going there in Pittsburgh. And that Sunday nighter is going to lose a lot of its luster. But I, like I said, I think it's only a matter of time before Rodgers is with the Steelers. I suspect that's coming sooner rather than later. All right, everybody, I'm going to have to get going. I cannot thank you enough for hanging out, talking Packers. I got a couple super chats right here at the end. We got Cheeto saying, hi. Hi, Cheeto. How you doing? Good to see you, man. Dustin, thanks again. Got to have a couple drinks with Evan at the meetup, and his whole demeanor was one of a dog can't wait. Yeah, he, like I said, great guy, great to talk to, great attitude. And he was so gracious with his time at the meetup, talking to all the fans. Like, just a good dude. I'm very, very much pulling for him. All right, everybody. Gotta go. Thanks so much. Please do me a monster favor. Hit like on the video, subscribe to the channel, and then tell your friends and tell your family. Cheesehead TV. We are devoted to Green Bay Packers fans worldwide. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great night. Go Pack, go.